Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome, good morning, a beautiful morning in Johannesburg. We have a very, very special guest in the studio this morning who needs no introduction to High FM. I'll introduce her in a few moments. Welcome, Jonathan Mach. How are you this morning?
Oh, wonderful. You know, it's blue skies, but the weather forecast a few days ago said it would be raining yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Now, I don't see any rain. And I don't think it was any rain last night. We desperately need rain. We haven't had rain for about 3 weeks. But one must make with one is. You know, mindfulness is this is it. This is what it is. And we've got beautiful weather at the moment.
Right. As I mentioned, we have a very special guest who needs no introduction. I have with me in the studio this morning, Adel Gazelski. I mean, many of you listened to that magnificent program on a Monday called Mystical Text between 1 and 2. It is really brilliant. It's really something to listen to. Now, Adel's going to talk to us all about a visit to Rhodes Island, which he listened to the program last Friday morning, and also give her a background about her family. I knew her late father very well, Doral Beer, and her mother, Juliet Labordel Lachaim, and give us a complete history of the Sephardi community that she knows of. Thank you. Welcome, Adel.
Good morning.
And how are you this morning?
Thank God. Thank God. Well, all good. And yes, blue skies. And yes. As my husband says, never trust the weather report. If it says it rains, it will be good.
But I've never seen it so bad because, you know, you look ahead, you know. This program is about the past, but weather forecast is about the future, you know, and as you say, you can't forecast the future, but generally they're right. They're better with cold fronts.
Yes.
I think it's going to be cooler next week, but with rain, you never know. You know, there could be rain here, but in the observatory, there's no rain.
But you know that yesterday morning was freezing early
in the morning. It was. I went for my morning walk and I nearly had hypothermia.
It was freezing.
It was blue skies.
Yeah.
And I walked out and I went,
it was in the afternoon, it went very hot again.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Adel, just give us a background. You know, you told us, but you went to a visit, etc., and where your parents came from, etc.
Okay, so we're talking about Rhodes Island, so it's primarily talking about my mother's side of the family. My mother is the Sfardia. She is, her parents, grandparents, and going back, interestingly, that I managed to find 9 generations that I've uncovered that come from Rhodes Island. Pretty interesting.
So when was that first generation? 300 years ago?
I only uncovered it just to give a bit of background. What happened is that in 2012, my family and I, we flew to Israel for a visit, and I said to my husband, let's go back to Rhodes Island. I like going back into the past. I think it's very important. I think it's important for myself. And I had 2 of my kids with me. So we flew to Rhodes Island for 4 days. Before I went, I did a tremendous amount of research, just trying to understand the larger part of our family. There's one guy that's part of the Hassan family. He lives in Los Angeles. He very much enjoyed genealogy. So what he did is that he actually did a family tree, and it's actually sitting on a website. There's a website specifically for the Jews of Rhodes, and he drew our entire family tree. So I had in my hand 5 generations, myself, my mother, her mother, the mother's family, and then apparently what seemed to be what we would call in Ashkenazi terms, the Alter Boben Zeder, which we called Musani Tariqa. It was the Tariqa family. And he left it there, and they had 7 children, and those 7 children, you know, had children and children and children. And so I had that information. And I contacted quite a few people that I knew because I've been involved with the community all my life. And they gave me pointers, et cetera, et cetera. It was winter when we went. We went in a December. We had to specifically ask that they open up the one shul. There were actually 5 shuls in Rhodes Island. But the one that remains standing that is now a World Heritage Site. And the lady there, there's a lady there that I think she lives on the island or she comes to the island. I can't remember. It was pretty desolate when we went. She opened it up and she opened up the archives for me. And I sat maybe for the good part of 2 hours. I had information, you know, of this entire family. And Isaac and I were talking just before, you know, they kept excellent records. They had excellence of births, of brisses, of marriages, of deaths, et cetera, et cetera. And within 2 hours, I managed to find another 2 generations back.
So that's seven now.
Yeah, that was seven. And what was incredible is that you go to the cemetery afterwards, and the cemetery is a fascinating cemetery because they don't only just say, you know, the name of the person and when they were born and when they died. The bottom slab of the tombstone tells the story of who they were. I've actually got pictures here.
In Ladino?
Not in Ladino, no. Here was the interesting thing. The first thing is that I struggled so much initially to actually try to work out what was going on. Obviously, I read Hebrew, understand it, speak it. I couldn't work out what was going on. And then I called my son. I said, just sit down. Let's just try to read this together. And what we found out was, just like Yiddish was written in Hebrew, Ladino was written in Hebrew, so the inscriptions were actually Ladino in Hebrew script, and that's how my grandparents communicated.
Well, they're called transliterated.
Yeah, so it was pretty hard, and eventually, when I read the Hebrew in Ladino, then I actually, you know, kind of like put the two and two together.
Can you remember one story that comes to mind?
Well, yes, so what happens, we went to the cemetery, and so they tell the stories of the people, and the first interesting thing was that the great-great-grandfather, Musani Tarika, five generations back for me, this Mr. Hassan in Los Angeles had found seven children. And they buried in rows. Okay, kind of I almost think that the family's like, you know, here, God forbid, somebody passes away, you say, well, keep the plot next door, you know, for
the
spouse.
Yeah, they reserve.
They looked like they reserved rows for families. And so there was a row of the family, and lo and behold, while reading the tombstones, I actually found another two siblings to the seven children that Grandpa Musani Tarika had. These two children weren't uncovered by Mr. Hassan because they died early in their lives. So it was very interesting. One was a young girl called Mazel Tov Tarika.
Mazel Tov, yeah.
Yeah, that was her name. And they said that she was a very sickly child. And she died at the age of nine, and that the family's heartbroken. And they gave like a little bit of a story. And then next door, can't remember exactly the name of the guy, another sibling that passed away at the age of 22. The tombstone read, here lies, I think it was Asher Tarika. I'm not exact. I can't remember. I put it on to Jeannie eventually so everybody should know. It said he was a young, strapping man who lived by the sea, meaning there was most of my family were actually seafarers. Mm. They shuttled between Rhodes Island and Turkey. My grandfather came from Turkey, and that's how he met my grandmother there. And it said he died at an accident at the sea. And the tombstone ends by saying, and the family have cried bitter tears that they didn't have the merit to take him to Chuppah.
Wow.
And it just actually told a story that nobody ever, ever knew, you know, and it didn't come into the annals of us drawing up our things because they were just buried there and nobody, obviously, four generations back now is going to tell about two siblings.
Yeah, this is the most beautiful custom. Imagine going to West Park and reading short synopsis of people as opposed to missed by children, grandchildren, auntie and uncles or whatever.
Yeah.
But you always see the name. But what would be beautiful to see a little story? You would love this.
Imagine. But you see at West Park today, you have the Hespedim where all the reverends or the rabbis talk about the deceased.
The problem is that they're talking in the present, and somebody who comes back many generations later
will never know about it because it's gone. Once the rabbi's spoken, it's not recorded. It's gone for posterity.
I like this idea, and I know it's going to happen that there'll be close relatives, but I would like to, because you can really put on anything on that.
You can put anything on the stone.
Correct. Is it about 50 words, I would say? It's not a long spiel.
Yeah, as we're talking, obviously our readers can't see. I'm scrolling to find the pictures because I'd actually like to read what Musani Tarika said. It talks about him and says what type of life he is, how he died. And there's actually, so you've got a little bit more, particularly that you're coming so down the generations, you know. It's not something that maybe the children knew, and the grandkids knew, but five generations.
I just think psychologically this is a magnificent idea because the family afterwards has to get together, and every word yes. is chosen very carefully. Yes. Because, you know, what is said at a hespit is like its words. It goes up into the air.
Correct.
But if those kind of words are contracted onto a tombstone.
Yes.
I just think, what a magnificent history. One could spend hours and hours there. Just, who was this person who died in 1910 at the age of 16,
yeah.
for example? 106.
Right. Yes. We've got to take an ad break. We'll be back in a few moments. So if you just tuned in, we're talking to my very, very special guest, Adele Gazilski, talking all about her past, you know, about Rhodes Island. As I mentioned before, I was very, very close to her late father, Doral Beer, and her mother, Juliet Leborl Lachaim. And I used to attend the Sephardi shul quite often and go to a shiur every Tuesday with Rabbi Gazilski. So continue again and tell us now more about your family history. You say go back 9 generations.
Yeah, so just to share with you, the grandfather that we all knew that I went out to search was, his name was Musani Tarika. That's how he was called, but his name was Moshe. Okay, Moshe Bereb Menachem, and that's why I managed to follow it up. And now, just looking at a photograph that I have of his tombstone, it reads: "Here lies a Ish Tamim, a
perfect man,
or Noach. Yeah, an Noach. Upright guy. Shatu Maim Kos Hamerorim. He drank of bitter waters. His cup was of bitter waters." Okay, be Yusurin Kashim. He suffered very greatly. Okay. And he was engulfed in a fire. So it's telling you how he died.
Right.
Okay.
Wow.
Then it says, wow. Ishto Loveshet Shchorim. His wife is wearing black. Okay. In terms of mourning, why? Sheyered Esh Minashamayim. A fire came down from heaven, the Nifla Ito, and fell upon him. So you see, so here you've got like just a little bit more history that he was a good guy. Okay. He suffered throughout his lifetime. And how did he die? Through a fire. Yeah. And his wife is now in mourning and wearing black.
Right. So just those key two, I think it's 5 facts there that each one is a chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. And then what was super amazing for me was because it said that his name was Moshe ben Menachem. Okay, I came with that information to the shul when I was there. I found out the son, Menachem, and then I managed to find then the grandfather whose name was Cheskiah Menachem, and we found that grave. And what was super like, it was like there was an awesome feeling. There was like a feeling of wow. That there I was standing with 2 of my daughters. I also have grandchildren, so for me standing in front of Cheskiyahu Menachem's grave, maybe gone now 300, 350 years. I'm going like, hi, Grandpa. Like, this is your granddaughter from another side of the world who lives a totally different paradigm to you. This is my daughters, and my daughters have grandchildren, which means you've got now 9 generations later living the same lifestyle of you in terms of the fact that we're still connected to Judaism, we're keeping the same Torah and mitzvahs as you, and more interestingly, we're keeping the same tradition
and the customs.
And, yeah, and that point in time, we were Rabbi and Rebbetzin of the shul, and I said, I was like thinking to myself, like, could it really be? I guess it was just amusing that there was like a reincarnative process where maybe all those that are lying, you know, here are like back thousands of kilometers away in a place called Johannesburg or Cape Town or Seattle or whatever have you, and we've come back again and again. And that like really is an incredible link. You know, when we say that we come from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, like it's...
In that link, is anybody in Yerushalayim in a Haredi type of...
You know what?
Or learning in Yeshiva in
Well,
in
here's Yerushalayim. An interesting thing because... My mother's side, this is my mother's mother going down that way. I tried to trace my mother's father. Now, my mother's father's name was Israel. So an Israel married a Tarika. And when I did, I came to a halt because there were so many people, so many descendants by the name of Israel. And if you go, when you come into the cemetery, on the left-hand side, there's one special row of tombstones, which were the rabbis of Rhodes Island. And very interestingly, I think out of 15, I don't know how many there were quite a lot, there were over a dozen, all their names were Israel. And when I followed back there and
Their first names?
Their surnames, Israel.
Oh.
Rabbi Israel, whether it was Avram Israel, you know, whatever it was, my grandfather was Yosef Israel. Israel was a thing. And when I followed that lineage, I couldn't find direct because there were just too many Israels. It's like going to look for Cohen. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But tradition had it that they actually were immigrants from Tzfat.
Mm.
You know, and Yerushalayim from the old cities. And then when you walk through the streets of Rhodos, it was called the small Yerushalayim. It was called Chika Yerushalayim, small Yerushalayim, because it's got the same arches. It's got the same cobblestones. If you walk in the old city of Jerusalem, the old city of Tzfat, Rhodes Island, you might as well be in the same place. So certainly they came from Israel, like from Kabbalists, you know, and really, really learned guys. They imported the rabbinate.
But this ninth generation you're talking about, which is your
yes, that was my mother's side. Yes.
So are some of them in Yerushalayim now?
No, thank God. All my family is in South Africa.
Yes.
Okay. We're all observant, thank God, et cetera, but no, we don't have anybody that's gone back to Yerushalayim yet.
In a few moments, I'm going to ask Adele to talk about her late father, because he came from Romania. He wasn't a Sephardi, but she'll give us the information. Just want to remind the listeners that Shabbat comes in this evening at 6:12, the Parshas Chaya Sara, and Shabbat terminates tomorrow at 7:08. On Sunday, we've got the Art of the Cantor, very, very special program between 4 and 5. And then on Tuesday, I've got in my program Talk of the Town between 9 and 10, a very, very special guest, Jeff Rothschild, who has been appointed to the board of South African Airways, the first Jewish person to be appointed to the board. So that's going to be a very interesting conversation. And just one last thing. We're talking about the past, and I always say, well, if you don't know your past, you don't have a future. Now, yesterday I visited Sharon Bolel, and she phoned me a few weeks ago to tell, you know, she's moved. She's now moved to Sydenham from Glenazel. She got some few Sephardim to come and have a look at, and I went. Yes. And I came there, and I found the most beautiful Nach, the Nevi'im, the Ketuvim, in Hebrew and in Yiddish. And if there's time, I'm going to read you, because the Yiddish of Isaiah, the prophecy of Isaiah, is unbelievable. You know, Isaiah was known as the greatest orator in the world.
Yes.
Isaiah. And there's the beautiful, you know, the famous Psalm 23, when you listen to that, you know, the Lord is my shepherd. Yiddish is magnificent.
Now, what's interesting, I'm looking at that book, in the shul in Rhodes Island, they have at the back of the shul, they've put together a museum, very nicely put together. There I saw a Sefer Torah that is over 800 years old, which means that the Jews of Rhodes Island, I was looking back now just quickly to refresh my mind, they've got proof that Jews lived in Rhodes Island from the 11th century. So just before the Spanish Inquisition.
Maybe before, because I got a reference of the Maccabees. There were Jews there.
Yes.
The whole story. So that goes back, 2,000 years at least.
Correct.
Right. So I think they came and they went because it was just a hop, skip and jump from Israel, you know, from Turkey. It was just an easy boat ride across.
Right.
And certainly, you know, after this, there were populations, and Rabbi Benjamin of Toledo in the 1200s went there and said, you know, he saw vibrant Jewish communities there. He said learned people, you know, that were really, really.
They had yeshivas.
Correct. 4,000. Well, there were five shuls there. You know, you have to have a farival.
You can walk down one road here.
You go to an island, you'll find two shuls, but there's one man living on the island.
Exactly.
I don't go to that shul.
I don't put my foot in that shul.
So while we're talking about books, I just want to mention one other thing. I've also brought in to show Adele and to show Jonathan a Haggadah translated into Russian.
Yes.
Unbelievable as well. But, you know, this is for another time. As I said, you know, this, well, what started this whole conversation is when I mentioned about Ladino, and yeah. I brought in that Sidur I got from Adele's late father, mm. Dorel. He gave me the Sidur from Seattle, the Sephardi Sidur. It is beautiful. Mm. And we've mentioned many names like Morris Mizrahi and Morris Turiel and all those. And there was Victor Cadronel, who spoke Ladino. And when you hear yeah. them benching, mm. that bendy gama, you've got to have that voice and you've got to have yes. the tune. It is absolutely magnificent. Indeed. I was absolutely enthralled. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. If you've got any comments you want to speak to us, please, you can text us on 34519. Or you can call us on 074-654-7335. So I'm going to ask Adele now to tell us all about where her father, her late father, came from.
Okay, sorry,
before we get, because I'd like to finish a theme.
Yeah, right.
Is that I got that in 1944.
Yes.
The Nazis came in.
Correct.
And they forced 1,800 men and women roads, and they went to Auschwitz. And
correct.
Only 200 survived.
Correct.
What was it like in the cemetery with that fact? Well,
the cemetery that I visited was obviously of the people that had lived in Rhodes going 100 years back.
Yes.
So the 1800 that were there in 1944, they cleared the place out. After Auschwitz, there never is a community in Rhodes Island anymore. And obviously I knew quite a few of the Auschwitz survivors. We had, you know, people speaking at our shul. There's the mother of the late Ronnie Hannon.
Yes. Thing.
She was an Auschwitz survivor. She, you know, spoke about it. There were others as well. But once the Nazis walked in, that closed the door on the Sfari community there, the Rhode Island community.
Remember, Isaac, our discussions from the beginning of the year, it's sort of, you know, observatory closing down, and
yes.
we went on to Zaga.
Yeah.
And that was Yom Kippur 1941. Mm. Do you know Thea Das, Rose Rosenberg, the family, they sponsor Kiddush because on that day,
yeah.
Is it Lech Lecha? No, is Yom Kippur. They rounded up all the Jews of Zaga, which is northern Lithuania, plus the Serenian, and they shot them and killed them. Mm. It was actually the Nazis. It wasn't the Nazis, it was the Lithuanian. Mm. But here, the Nazis came. They cleared out roads, and apparently when the Allies bombed them, also they took out a lot of buildings.
They did. So
it was really the end of roads.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. When I'm saying there were five shuls, so the one shul, thank God, remained as a World Heritage Site. It was refurbished, and it's there, and it has the museum, and they have the clothes, and Kiddush cups, and all sorts of, you know, stuff that people gave maybe from those that ran away or managed to survive. But if you go to another shul, it's like a desolate piece of ground, and you kind of can see where the bimah was, where the Aron Kodesh was. There's a little bit of a chair that was in the Ezrat HaNashim. I even went back to the house because of all the records, I managed to go back to my grandparents.
Where
they lived, and it's early non-Jewish people there that live there now. Obviously, the survivors or the descendants, they people go back for a bar mitzvah, for a wedding. Last week you asked, is Chabad there? Yes, Chabad moved in permanently there. Now, last year when we went, we had to survive. We connected with Chabad of Athens. When we arrived from Israel, we had a day in Athens. And there are Chabad Shluchim there, and she helped us with a little bit of the kashrut food, and we survived basically on fruit and vegetables otherwise in the thing, because there's
you mentioned the Nazis came into Rhodes, but what is amazing that they didn't destroy the cemetery, because you know when they came into Lithuania or they went to Poland, the first thing is they went and they bulldozed all the cemeteries.
They didn't bulldoze. I think there was damage to it, and that afterwards people, you know, paid money to ensure to restore it. When you walk through the cemetery, you will see tombstones, pieces of tombstones just hanging around that were broken. I'm not sure if they were because of the Nazis. What was interesting about Rhodes is that there were four sections to it. There was a Christian section, and there was a Jewish section, and I think a Muslim section, and another section. The Judaria, the Jews, lived on the coast, exactly on the harbor, because many of them were merchants. My grandfather was a merchant.
Okay.
So the first people to get destroyed were the Jews. They were bombed out. But I've got to tell you another fascinating thing, which came down in the annals of history, and it was also a wow moment for me. When I got told stories, particularly of my mother's family, particularly of my maternal grandparents. You know, we were told that when they wanted to date, you know, there was still all that the shidduchim and the dating, right? They were already on the fringe that they were trying to make their own dates. They would run away to like three windmills that were what's called on the mandraki, which is like the pavilion. And they would hide behind the three windmills. That's where they would, you know, meet each other. And when we were walking down the mandraki, beautiful, really, really beautiful Mediterranean sea, like amazing. Mm. Now it's obviously got little cafes where, you know, you can eat and drink and whatever have you. I saw those three windmills and I came there and I stood there and I thought to myself, like, my grandparents are looking up from heaven like, aha, I found your hiding place. And I got so excited. Mm. I pulled out my phone and lo and behold, there was Wi-Fi.
Wow.
And I actually FaceTimed my family, my kids and my grandkids. And I said, do you know that I'm standing in the place where my grandparents, your great-grand and great-great-grandparents met. They would date. Like, isn't this amazing? Oh, and look how beautiful it was. It certainly was a very romantic place, I got to tell you.
But, you know, Rhodes Island, I wasn't aware, is Greek. It's always been a lot of Greek. So did your family speak Greek?
No. Now, here's what's interesting, is that until just before the war, it was actually under Italian rule.
Italian.
Believe it or not, I have an Italian passport, and so does the rest of my family, because my grandparents, great grandparents were Italian citizens.
Mm.
So we all hold it's Italian, not Greek.
Mm.
Though very much the foodstuffs that Ray spoke about, certain of them, you know, like baklava and karaev and all of that, if you go to the Greeks, you'll see that we have very similar, you know, eating patterns. Or
we're taking an ad break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, we do have Adel Kozilski in the studio live. We're talking all about Rhodes Island and her family. And just before we continue, just to remind you that Shabbat comes in at 6:12, terminates tomorrow at 7:08. The Parshas Chayesara, and this program, this is repeated on Sunday morning just after 9. So now, Adel, tell us all about now where your late father came from. As I said, Romania.
So my father was born in Bucharest, Romania. Okay.
And so he wasn't a Sephardi.
He wasn't a Sephardi. Though they did say that a lot of the Romanians did have Sephardi-like connection, but he wasn't.
Just an aside, you know, in Bulgaria they spoke Ladino.
Yes. So he didn't, he knew Yiddish. He was very much from an Ashkenazi family. Interesting, you call him Dorel Beer. Our surname isn't Beer. The family name is Rappaport. Okay. And what happened with my dad was that he lost his father at a very young age, leaving my grandmother, his, and one older brother, much older brother, 11 years older than him. They were orphans, etc. The war started. Okay. And obviously the Nazis were also coming in. And all the winds of war were worrying the Jewish community. And what happened with my dad is that he left Romania, Bucharest, clandestinely with my grandmother and his older brother through the network of the Jewish organizations that were working underground, trying, you know, to save Jewish lives. And he actually physically walked from Romania through the Alps, through Austria, through everything until I think he came to Italy, where he boarded one of the Exodus ships, the Exodus type ships, and he was brought into Israel, you know, on a legal basis. So that's, you know, where he did. Interestingly, I went to look. I was overseas in Europe, and I said to my husband, it was unplanned. We were sitting in Vienna, and I said to my husband, you know what? I want to go back to Bucharest. I want to go see if I can find my grandfather there. You know, there. And my father had got somebody who'd gone on a business trip, and they actually found the cemetery. So we detoured. That night in the hotel, we just booked a flight to Bucharest in the morning. We went back to the airport, left our car, and we flew into Bucharest in the rain, in the snow, in the sleet, rented a car, and I went searching for my grandfather. And sadly, I hadn't done enough homework to understand, which I only understood by the end of the day is that there were actually also three cemeteries in Bucharest, and I had managed to trample through two. And by the time I could get to the third, it was either stay in Bucharest or miss your flight. And we almost didn't get back to Vienna. So I never managed to get to my to my grandfather's. But it's certainly something that I wanted to go back again, go see how did you live? You know, how did you experience things? So my dad landed in Israel, settled in Haifa, served in the IDF in the
Haganah.
Not in the Haganah. It was post-war. He still had a bit of schooling.
And then he
was part of the IDF or whatever it was in those days, whatever they called themselves, in the Sinai campaign. And then he stayed on as a civilian, working in the tank corps. And then his brother married, and they the brother's wife's family came to Rhodesia. So he left, leaving my father and my grandmother there, and then eventually they said, like, why don't you come over to Africa? So, you know, like the Jewish trip of, like, we just go everywhere, you know?
The wandering
and
Jew.
Exactly. Wandering. And so my mother's family came from
Rhodes,
went to Mufulira. My grandparents ran away. They came in. They were miners in Mufulira. They came down to Rhodesia, and then my mother and father
met. How did
they
get to Rhodesia? Did they go to Cape Town first? Or
No. They actually went into Zambia. So there were some in the Congo you mentioned and some things. So it was kind of
a migration
downwards.
Did they come down through North Africa?
Yes.
Egypt,
yes. Cape Town, Johannesburg didn't start first. We are the end of the journey.
The litters did Cape Town. We spoke about
Yes. Can I just ask him? Yeah. Now, but you mentioned the name, how he got the name.
Right, so let me explain to you. So his name was Rappaport. Now he has to run away. So they had to do false passports. So they said, look, and you have to take on a non-Jewish name, otherwise you're going to be caught. They literally tore up every single document that proved that they were Jewish, Rappaport or anything like that, and they took on the name Beer. And they traveled with those documents.
How do you spell Beer?
B-E-E-R.
As in beer, not yeah. B-E-H-R. Yeah.
No, B-E-E-R. And so when he arrived in Israel and, you know, they registered him there, he couldn't prove he was a Rappaport. And so that name stuck. But it was a name of convenience to allow them to escape, you know, and travel through Europe.
Yeah. But then he met your mother in
Rhodesia.
In Rhodesia,
In Salisbury. And they got married there. Now, what was interesting then, so there was a huge Sephardi community there, okay, and Ashkenazi one. I was born there. I also did a pilgrimage back
to Zimbabwean.
I'm a Zimbabwean.
The best wives come
from
Zimbabwe.
I'm the Wenwis.
My wife's from Zimbabwe.
Yes, of course. And so a couple of years ago, I actually took two of my other kids and we went back to Zimbabwe, back to Salisbury.
Was this after the shul burnt down or before?
No, in Salisbury.
Where did it burn down? In Bulawayo.
Didn't burn down in Salisbury. Yeah. And I went back to the Sephardi shul in Salisbury, which interestingly is built on the basis of the Sephardi shul in Rhodes Island.
Right. It's a beautiful shul.
It's beautiful. My parents were married there. I lived my whole life there until we emigrated to South Africa.
How old were you there?
I was there until the age of 12.
Can I ask you, but then now your mother being a Sephardi, your father being an Ashkenazi, you would have thought that this is...
This was the interesting thing.
Do they have for a brocha, please?
I have to share the story about a brocha. My father, sadly, because of his life circumstance, had no input from a Jewish perspective, in terms of traditions. He left when he was 7 or 9, and life was just about survival.
Correct.
You know, we've got a documented 3-hour talk my father gave. We actually sat him down and said, tell your story. He didn't know from Yiddishkeit just simply because there was no education, no nothing. It was just a matter of just let's survive.
He said it was walking for miles, walking.
And when you get to Israel, it's about survival. So he wasn't... This was the interesting thing about my father. He wasn't observant in any way whatsoever until he came to Rhodesia. Then he meets my lovely mother. And for him, this then became Judaism. And so he embraced the Sephardi tradition completely. Okay. Now, for the first 12 years, whilst there was an Ashkenazi shul, and I went to Sharon School, which was the Jewish school there. Every year they used to rotate bat mitzvahs. I even had my bat mitzvah in the Ashkenazi shul. We didn't really mix with the Ashkenazi part of the congregation. our brochas were Borekas and Kadaib and Masapan and you name it. And then we come to South Africa, okay, a naive person who thinks this is what Judaism is all about. This is what the brochas, they're just sweet and delicious stuff. And the first time, I was actually thinking this morning, the first time I saw a cholent, I went, what the freak is this? And then herring and kechel, I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about any Ashkenazi food. I had to get a whole new education.
It was a foreign religion.
It was completely foreign to us. Obviously, I've married an Ashkenazi as well now. And so now we have an integration. We have herring, we have kechel, we have cholent, we have, you know, masapan, okay. We have kind of asika. Okay. We just have anything that tastes good. So, you know, we laugh, we say that we ashka safards, you know. Yeah. There's just mixed marriage now.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by your father, this walk.
Yes.
Because I've met some Ethiopians who have converted to Judaism, who have actually walked from Ethiopia to South Africa through the jungles. It took them 3-4 months. Walked. They never even took a bus. They were absolutely penniless. We now, everything's soft. We go in Aliyah, LL. We complain because, you know, the food is, you know, not tasty. My grandfather, my father's father, came by boat from Zaga to by himself with nothing, yes. Nothing.
We are so soft
now when it comes to this story.
Right. We just got to take an air break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This talk has been absolutely fascinating.
Yes, 10 out of 10.
It's 10 out of 10.
But anyone who comes from Zimbabwe, it's always, you start off at 10 out of 10, you can only get better.
Yeah, 11 out of 10 then. You have to have a bonus point.
Well, I must tell you, that's what I say.
You're looking for a sugar, you must see a Zimbabwean history.
I love history, and as I said, you don't know your past, you don't have a future. Yeah, there's so much there. And, you know, if all the people out there would only take time to talk to their parents or their grandparents where they came from and record the history. But a lot of them, you know, who survived the Holocaust didn't want to talk about it.
Yes. Okay.
But it's so important to know this because there's such a rich, rich culture, such a rich
history. I'll tell you what I find the most fascinating thing, and it's something obviously that when I'm talking to somebody who's not observant or I'm trying to encourage somebody to rekindle the Jewish flame in them. What is interesting is that for me, when you can go back and you can find your great-grandfather 9 generations back, wherever it is, it doesn't have to be Rhode Island, it could be Lithuania, it could be wherever it is, like, you cannot deny the authenticity of Judaism and the Masorah, the tradition that has been passed over, and that's what boggled my mind. When I stood before that grave in Rhode Island and I was saying something to Helim, I went, hey, this is the same thing that this grandfather said. And before him, there was another 9 generations and another 9 generations. No other people on the planet can show that, can say that, can point to that and say, we have a tradition that comes forward. And the Haggadot, the Siddurim, whether they were Hebrew Ladino, Hebrew Russian, Hebrew Yiddish, Hebrew whatever have you, shows the authenticity of who we are as a people. And that's unbelievably powerful.
So this just leads into, I think, one of the most beautiful writings of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks.
Mm.
He seems to be on this week's Parsha.
Yes.
And he says, it starts like this. On August the 11th, 2017, the world's oldest man passed away just a month short of his 114th birthday, making him one of the 10 longest lived men since modern recording keeping began. If you knew nothing else about him, you would be justified in thinking that he led a peaceful, spared of fear, grief, and danger. The actual truth is the opposite. The man in question was Yisrael Kristal, Holocaust survivor. Born in Poland in 1903, he survived 4 years in the Lodz ghetto and was then transported to Auschwitz. In the ghetto, his 2 children died. In Auschwitz, his wife was killed. When Auschwitz was liberated, he was a walking skeleton weighing a mere 37 kilos. He was the only member of his family to survive. Then he remarried, he went to Haifa, on his 113th birthday, he had his first bar mitzvah.
Amazing, huh?
And under that, he put all his children, his grandchildren, and great-grandchildren under his talis.
That's an incredible thing.
And what the bottom line is comparing this to Avraham, and I would recommend all the readers to try get this. This is the most magnificent Pasha. Jonathan Sacks says, this is a transformative era. Idea. To survive tragedy and trauma, which we must know about, first build the future. Only then remember the past. And I thought, as a psychiatrist, as a psychologist, this is the most magnificent idea. We often talk about memories. But if you have trauma, build your future first.
Mm.
And then go back to your past. Don't live in your past. Live it. And this is what we've been talking about today. So from our side, thank you very, very much.
It's been wonderful having you in the studio. It's absolutely fascinating. Yes.
Thank you.
So I just want to wish
maybe
everybody.
Maybe we should do, I'm saying it on air, maybe we should do something about Zimbabwe also and just talk about the Jews in Zimbabwe.
There was
a great age, like I think my parents and all those, you know, that came. Ashkenazi and Sephardi had a wonderful.
I may say this publicly, but I would love my wife, Shira, who left there at 17, 18, and my parents, my father-in-law still lives with us, going to Eretz Israel tomorrow night. I would love the two of you, of Zimbabwean women, how they saw those formative years then.
Yes, because that's another area of Jewish life.
Is that
again.
Correct?
Gone now to a large extent. There is a handful of people there. You know, now the Ashkenazi and Sephardi congregation join together.
Together in Salisbury, they use the same shul.
So they have prayers one because there's literally a handful of them. But there was a golden age.
It was
Zimbabwe.
A golden age of just a few thousand. But you know, everyone knew each other.
Yes.
Right. And we named Bulawayo, a very very strong Jewish Ashkenazi community.
Yes. Yeah.
So we just want to wish you, thank you for coming in, to wish you all a Shabbat Shalom, enjoy the rest of the week, go well, and thank you, Craig, for controlling, and
very nice.
Thank you for being in your listenership.